come on, guys. How are you going? You good? Welcome to TechEd. As they said, my name is Jeff Alexander. I'm a technical evangelist here at Microsoft Australia. And I have one other fairly small role at TechEd. I own all the content for this event. Okay, so if the content sucks, you come and talk to me, right? So one of the things that we do during TechEd is we want to make sure, over the last few years, we wanted to make sure that we had sessions that were targeted at our different audiences. And you guys being the IT pros, we wanted to make sure we had one particular plenary for the IT pros and one for those other guys, the devs that are over somewhere else. And so that's why we developed these sessions before the main keynote that goes on. And so we're going to have a session that is totally developed for you guys. So we hope that you're going to love the content that we're doing today. There's going to be quite a lot of server hugging going on today because we're a bunch of server guys. So with that, I wanted to welcome, we're very lucky to have two guys from Microsoft in Redmond who are in the virtualization team. And they're going to come and talk to you about the modern data center and all about the new R2 product to the max. So please welcome, give a good Gold Coast welcome to Jeff Woolsey and Ben Armstrong.
Good afternoon, Australia. How's everyone doing? Oh, we can do a little bit better than that. How's everybody doing? Excellent. This is a super pleasure to be here. My name is Jeff Woolsey. I'm a principal program manager in the Cloud and Enterprise Division. And this is Mr.?
I'm Ben Armstrong. I'm a principal program manager on the core virtualization team.
Awesome. Thank you guys so very much. First thing I absolutely want to do is, first of all, a huge thank you to you so very much. It has been an exceptional year. We have the release. I was here literally last year for the launch of Windows Server 2012. And guess what? A year later, we're back again. This time with Windows Server 2012 R2, System Center 2012 R2, we have been working just night and day listening to your feedback, understanding what you need, understanding your requirements, and making sure we're building the right thing. So first of all, a sincere thank you to all of you for your feedback, and our commitment to you is to make sure that we're always taking that feedback and building the best solutions for you. So with that, Ben, take us through a retrospective here.
Thank you very much. So when we were asked to do this session and we were given some, you know, pointers and some ideas, I was absolutely thrilled to hear that this was going to be, you know, the 20th TechEd Australia, because I'm a bit of an IT history buff. So I immediately hit the books and went, okay, let's look at, you know, what Microsoft's been doing in the server space for the last 20 years. So fascinating little fact, 20 years ago, July 1993, Microsoft released the first server OS, Windows NT Advanced Server version 3.1. So I have to ask, did anyone here actually use this? Oh, look, that is more
awesome.
Hands than I was expecting. Fantastic work, guys. So for those of you who remember, when NT 3.1 came out as a server, this was actually quite, you know, it was a revolutionary thing because it was a server with a GUI. You know, at that stage, all other servers, it was primarily command line based, it was SCO Unix, it was, you know, early versions of NetWare. And, you know, even back then, Microsoft was really focused on, we want to do powerful servers, but make them easy to use. You know, and when we first came out with that, there was a lot of people who were like, Microsoft, they don't know about servers. Who puts a GUI on a server? You know, but it wasn't long until, you know, the momentum built. I certainly know I, in my day, replaced many network servers with NT servers back when I was working in IT. So moving forward, 10 years. This one I love. So 10 years ago, you know, this was 2003, Microsoft was already talking about a dynamic data center vision. And this is really what became the building of our cloud story. You know, 10 years ago, we were already talking about, hey, what you need to do is you need to be able to separate your software from your hardware, and you need to be able to be agile, you need to be able to be responsive. And it was actually as part of this that 10 years ago, Microsoft acquired Kinectix, and Jeff and I came to the company to start working on virtualization at Microsoft. So then, 5 years ago, 5 years after the acquisition, first release of Hyper-V. So it's a lot of work, so another show of hands. How many people, you know, used the first release of Hyper-V? Good
awesome.
People.
Thank you, guys.
So this was a big milestone for us. But it was also the same year, 5 years ago, when we did the first public CTP of Azure. This was the first time that Microsoft came out and said, hey, you know, public cloud, platform as a service. You know, we want to change the way you think about developing applications. We want to explain to you how to build, you know, server applications that are innately elastic and scalable. Then 3 years ago, Azure went live for production workloads. So you can see, in the last 20 years, it's been an amazing journey of what we've come on. And I'm going to pass back to Jeff, who's going to recap where we are today and where we're going.
Oh, my goodness. And that's a great recap. And honestly, I feel like we're just beginning the next phase, the next huge transitional phase in IT, and it's about cloud. A couple of things I want to point out is, first of all, the momentum behind both Windows Server and System Center. We are seeing some tremendous momentum already. One of my favorites here from Suncorp: we could potentially save more than $300,000 annually in software licensing costs by switching to Hyper-V. Forrester, an industry analyst, basically said preconceived notions about Microsoft versus VMware for the virtualization layer need to be reexamined. Absolutely 100% true. Let me be very clear. With Windows Server 2012, the one we released over a year ago, that wasn't the release where we caught up to VMware. That's the one where we blew by them. And even though they had VMworld last week, guess what? They still haven't caught up to 2012, and we're coming out with R2. So we've got a tremendous amount of momentum going on in cloud, whether it's private, whether it's public, whether it's service providers. And again, our commitment to you is to listen very carefully and make sure we're delivering the right set of products. When it comes to performance, we set some world records. Anybody interested in, say, SAP? So we actually were working very closely with SAP during the development of Windows Server 2012. And I'll never forget actually being on a conference call with a number of SAP architects, and they said, we need to talk to you immediately. And I said, okay, well, let me understand what's going on here. And they said, we're running SAP on Windows Server 2012 pre-release bits. We have never seen SAP run this fast on any virtualization platform ever. And I said, and what's your question? And they said, we just wanted to verify this is what we're seeing. Absolutely yes. So when we RTM the final bits, guess what? They ran their benchmarks. And folks, this is on two socket servers. This isn't on some crazy hardware that you're never gonna see or as a huge capital investment. This is standard stock two socket servers, SAP three-tier configuration SQL Server. You can see the link there. You can see all of the testing done by SAP. Blows away the competition. So we're extremely excited about the performance scalability we delivered, again, in 2012. Haven't even gotten R2 yet. And then, of course, there's some big news with the Microsoft Oracle partnership. Think about this. Now we're talking about Oracle fully supporting their products on Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V. And by the way, Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V, spoiler alert, that's what powers Azure. Azure is running Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V, the same bits you get. Guess what? Oracle's fully supporting Oracle products on Azure as well. And it's not just support, it's license mobility. So think about this. If you have Oracle today, you own Oracle licenses, you can take those licenses up to the cloud, to Microsoft Azure, run it there. If you want to run Java, fully supported. Popular configurations, we're going to have Oracle Linux up there, we're going to have popular images sitting up in the gallery. That's a tremendous statement going on there. Talks about the adoption, the scalability, the performance of both Windows Server and Azure. So we're extremely excited about that. And again, public links on this as well. So one of the things I wanted to make sure I'm very clear about is the Microsoft Cloud OS vision. Very often I get asked, so Jeff, what is it? Is it like the other guys? No, it's actually very different. Only Microsoft can deliver on this Cloud OS vision. Let me be very clear and transparent about this. So we think about the cloud as having three legs to a stool. It's really simple. And the first one starts with private cloud. And private cloud is an outgrowth of virtualization. Now, it's not virtualization. Virtualization is a component of it, but private cloud is so much more than that. But I can sum up the private cloud in one word: control. I talk to customers all over the world, including Australia, that tell me, Jeff, I've got workloads that have to run in an Australian data center, on Australian soil, by an Australian citizen. I know how cool Azure is, but you know what? I need to run it. Are we going to argue about this? Absolutely not. This isn't a technical conversation at all. This is a business conversation. This is a regulatory compliance conversation. What we want to do is give you the ability to run your workloads wherever, whenever it makes sense, on whatever cloud you want to do that on. So with private cloud, that's Windows Server and System Center. It's about control. At the same time, customers want to leverage the capabilities we're delivering in our public cloud. Our public cloud, which consists of platform as a service, software as a service, and infrastructure as a service, where we have things like Office 365, where I can create Azure virtual machines. I can write applications with the platform as a service that literally can run here or scale around the world. What you're seeing here is a comprehensive cloud OS vision. And then finally, service providers. So whereas private cloud was around control, the public cloud is around scale, service providers are about customization and reach. You may already be working with service providers. Probably service providers in the room. Fantastic. We know there are places around the world where we don't have our own offerings. Or you may work with a service provider, you have a great relationship, great terms, and you want to keep that going. Fantastic. We want to make sure we give you the best solution, the best technology for clouds there as well. And again, Windows Server and System Center. So why is this so important? This is so important because depending on who you talk to, you're going to get a different answer for cloud. If you talk to VMware, they're going to tell you, you know what, cloud is really this private thing. Yeah, they got this new hybrid thing that they've announced this last week. Give me a break. They're years behind us, literally years. That's not an exaggeration in any way, shape, or form. They are years behind us. So they've got private. If you talk to Salesforce.com, they'll tell you, no, that's not cloud. Salesforce.com will tell you, cloud is running software as a service. If you talk to Amazon, they'll say, no, that's not it either. Amazon will tell you, cloud is running virtual machines up there. Well, we disagree with all of them. We think cloud is everything. It's all three. It's not one. It's not making this decision or that decision. It's what makes business sense for you. Today, it could be the private cloud. Tomorrow, it could be a service provider. Next day, it could be Azure. Could be a combination of any or all three of these. That's what our cloud vision is all about. One thing you also notice is the Azure Pack. I'll be demoing that shortly. But the Azure Pack is something we've just announced, which is fantastic. It's also about providing a consistent platform. Because one of the challenges we see today is, hey, you go up to Salesforce.com, you get one experience. You go to Amazon, you get a different experience. You go to Azure, you get a different one, and then you go to your own private cloud, and guess what? There's at least four different experiences there. I thought cloud was supposed to be easy. I thought it was supposed to be consistent. Well, we want to help make it easier. We want to help make it more consistent. So with the Windows Azure Pack, we're taking our learnings from running Azure, and we're actually giving them to you. Here you go, free code, free bits. Guess what? It means that if I'm building my own private cloud, or if I have service providers that want to build Azure clouds that look just like Azure, guess what? We're giving you the code to do that. And I'll talk more about the Azure Pack in a moment. Finally, when you look at our CloudOS vision, it's about key pillars that support that, such as development. Visual Studio, best tools out there, whether it's private, public, or a service provider. Management. System Center is key. System Center is the best way to manage your Microsoft workloads. Super simple here. If you're running SharePoint, if you're running Dynamics, if you're running Link, if you're running Exchange, guess what? The best way to manage these is Microsoft System Center. Data. Guess what? We've got SQL Server. And in Azure, we've got native SQL Server, and we also have SQL that you can use as a VM in infrastructure as a service, depending on how you'd like to access your data. Identity. Identity is key. And identity equates with Active Directory. Sure, you can try and roll your own identity. Good luck with that. Why wouldn't you just use Active Directory, which, again, is available as part of Windows Server? It's going to be used by your service provider. Oh, and by the way, Azure Active Directory has been around now for quite a while, and we're doing tremendous business there. So true federation of identity. And then finally, virtualization. We think of virtualization absolutely as a key component, and Hyper-V is there throughout all of it. Hyper-V is part of Windows Server for your private cloud, for service providers, and again, Hyper-V is the same exact hypervisor we're running on Azure. So when people ask me, gosh, Jeff, is Hyper-V really enterprise class? I kind of have to laugh. We're running some of the biggest clouds on Earth. We've been doing it for years on Hyper-V. Works great. Works fantastic. We're super excited about this. And it gives you the consistency, so wherever and whenever you choose to start that roadmap, it all continues to be consistent. Whether you start in private, whether you start in public, it's all just going to work. So when we think about the cloud OS, we think of it as having these pillars below it, transforming the data center, empowering people-centric IT, because we know people are bringing in all sorts of devices. It's not just desktops, it's not laptops, it's tablets, it's phones, it's iOS, it's Android, it's Windows Phone, you name it. And guess what? You guys are expected to manage all of it and make it all work. So when guys bring in their random phones and they want to plug into your network, they expect it's just going to work. At the same time, your boss wants to make sure that data isn't leaking out the side door as well. Because, by the way, he may have brought in some Android device that he put his own custom ROMs on to do some cool things with, and oh, by the way, he's now creating some potential insecurity in your infrastructure. But somehow, you have to be the one that has to manage all of that. So how do you manage both policy and governance for people-centric IT? Unlocking insights on any data. Big data is here. How do we do more with it? How do we sift through so much data to get the right analytics around it? And finally, enabling modern apps. Now, you can see we've got four pillars here, and quite honestly, Ben and I could talk to you pretty much for the rest of the day, and we still wouldn't be scratching the surface on all four of these pillars. So for today, for now, we're going to focus on the first one, transforming the data center. But throughout the week, you're going to see sessions all week. They're going to go deep into every one of these pillars. Starting with transforming the data center, complexity and cost are enemies. One of the great things about cloud is we are really trying to simplify the world, trying to simplify a lot of the complexity that's run rampant in our data centers. Networking is a perfect example. Networking today is fraught with so much peril because it is so complex. Real simple question. How many of you are managing your IP addresses with Excel spreadsheets? Yeah. See that one all the time. It's a painful problem. That's just one example. Storage, way too complex, way too expensive. Abstraction should be integrated. So as we look at this, there's a couple of core principles we take in mind. Standards-based management. Standards-based management. Let me say it one more time. Standards-based management. One of the biggest challenges I hear when talking with customers about storage is they have siloed storage. I bought some storage from vendor 1, vendor 2, vendor 3, and vendor 4. I got storage all over the place, but guess what? I have to manage it using different tools. I can't see it from all one location. I can't manage it from all one location. Give me some standards-based management to actually be more efficient about this. I want products that are easy to adopt and simply just work. Based on high-volume components, every time I have to buy some specialized piece of hardware, it adds complexity. It adds cost to running my data center. Solve the right place, the right problem in the right place in the right way. I don't know how many times Ben and I hear this, but a customer will come to us and say, I want feature X. Give me feature X. And while I'm thrilled, tell me, want to hear the feedback, I want to understand why you want feature X. Because while you may think that feature may solve your problem, there could be actually many different ways we could solve it in much better and more elegant ways. And finally, we want to shift from planning, deploying, and fixing and integrating systems to adding new capacity and capabilities. Azure is a perfect example of that. Think of your existing data center today. What if you could just say, you know what? I need 20 more terabytes of storage. Okay, great. Let's just use Azure as an extension of my data center. Give me the ability to extend my data, my resources, and still manage it and still control it the way I've been managing my on-premises. So we're very excited about that. So it's time. It's time to virtualize every workload. And we know we hit the tipping point. Last year, over 50% of new workloads are now created in VMs. We're there. It's time to rethink storage. There are some major paradigm shifts happening in storage. Thank goodness. I've been sitting around waiting for this to happen. The magic bullet has been SSD. For the longest time, we've been held hostage to the fact that hard disks have had a spinning platter in there and a read-write head that goes across the disk. People always talk to me about, hey, what do I need to know about, you know, optimizing Hyper-V for performance? Well, most of the time, Hyper-V is waiting for I/O. Give me really fast performance. Well, guess what? SSD is here. And now we can reduce the cost of I/O performance and IOPS. And it's time to simplify networking. We shouldn't be doing this with Excel spreadsheets, okay? We should be doing this by making the network smarter. That's what software-defined networking is all about, and we'll get to more of that in just a moment.
Thank you. So I want to spend some time talking about what we've been doing in storage. But before I get there, I want to make some observations about where we are today as an industry with storage. I like to say that, you know, I talk to lots of customers, and no matter who I talk to, there are two facts about storage that I know before the conversation even starts. And this is true of, you know, the mom and pop shop with a server under the stairs. It's true of the Fortune 100 company. The first fact is, whatever their storage needs are, there's a perfect solution out there for them. You know, I could sit down with them, look through the offerings from the vendors, figure out like, hey, yeah, for you, this would be great. The second thing is, no matter what size they are, that solution is more than they are willing to pay for. Every time I've talked to small companies where they're at the stage where they're like, we can't do this with direct attached storage anymore. We need to get an iSCSI SAN, and wow, that's more than we can afford. I've talked to Fortune 100 companies who are like, Ben, we're at the stage where we have 50 SANs in our environment, and we're looking at our growth, and we think we're going to have to double that number, and that is an insane amount of money. So that is the biggest piece of feedback that we're hearing. And as Jeff mentioned, when we go out and we talk to people about what's holding you back, you know, what, why are you not getting more out of your data center? You know, like 9 times out of 10, it's the storage. You know, it's the storage that's holding people back. It's the storage that's stopping people from being able to do what they want to do. And so this is a big area that Microsoft as a whole is really focusing on, is what can we do to revolutionize, you know, the storage landscape for servers today. Another thing I'd like to highlight before I jump into the slides is, you probably all remember 10 years ago when we started talking about virtualization, you know, most of you were like, it's kind of interesting, I'm not sure where this is going. And then 5 years ago, you know, some of you started jumping on early. Some of you started going like, yeah, you know, this can really save us money. You know, this can really enable new things. And today we're at a point where the tide's really turned. Well, let me tell you, we are at the beginning of that process right now with storage and networking. You know, the next place where you're going to be able to be the hero for your company is when you can walk in and explain that you just saved a lot of money, you've just enabled new scenarios by completely changing the way your company looks at storage and networking. So, let's talk about what we've done in 2012, what we're doing in 2012 R2. So, the big, you know, push forward in 2012 was the combination of scale-out file server and storage spaces on the back end. So I'd like to do a quick show of hands. How many people here have played with the scale-out file server in 2012? That is not enough hands. I was expecting that to be small, so let me put this challenge out here. And I always get grief from the development team about this because I'm supposed to be the Hyper-V guy, but honestly, if all I achieve at this show is that everyone here goes back to their office and tries out scale-out file server and understands how awesomely powerful it is, then I am a happy man. Now, the scale-out file server that we delivered in 2012 is phenomenal. Now, I could spend an entire session just talking about it, but two things I'd like to call out. The first one is we have seamless failover for a scale-out file server. What does this mean? I can set up a two-node, you know, scale-out file server. I can have a bunch of computers hammering it, copying files, doing transactions. One of those nodes fails, and no client is affected. No copy gets dropped, no data gets dropped. No one knows that that box went down except for the guy who's administrating the server. As far as I'm concerned, that's black magic. That is awesome. The second thing is the work we've done around resiliency. Now, as I said, I spend a lot of time talking with customers from around the world, you know, doing different private cloud deployments. And I'm the sort of guy who I like to have the uncomfortable conversation. So if you want to have that with me, feel free to find me later in the show. But I like to go to people and go, okay, you've been doing private cloud for a while now. Tell me the last time you had a catastrophe, and let's talk through what that looked like. Let me tell you, 9 times out of 10, when I ask people, when was the last time that your cloud went really bad? What I hear, and I hear the story over and over again, is, you know, one day, something just went out with the storage. You know, the network just wigged out for 5 seconds. You know, for 5 seconds, packets got dropped, no storage didn't happen, and the world ended as far as I was concerned. You know, it was 3 a.m. in the morning, I got the emergency call, you know, you get in the car, you head into the data center. By the time you get there, everything's back to normal. You know, your infrastructure's fine. Oh, but half your workloads are dead. You know, and that is a story I have heard. So we spent a lot of time with SMB 3.0 and the scale-out file server where we can actually survive up to a 30-second complete network disruption. So if you have, you know, your workloads running on scale-out file server, you know, something goes wrong, a switch goes down, you know, packets get dropped for 5 seconds while things are getting rerouted, you will sleep through that. You will not get the call at 3 a.m. in the morning. So as I said, this is awesome technology. And if I achieve nothing else today but that you guys go and have a look at this and pay some real attention, I'll be happy. But we've been working even harder in R2 to continue to figure out how can we give you, you know, the best performing storage solution at, you know, a price point that's actually reasonable. So one of the big technologies we've invested in is storage tiering. So another show of hands time. I love show of hands. How many people have an SSD in their laptop or portable device? They're fantastic. We love them. How many people here have gone and costed out enterprise-grade SSDs for server storage? Okay, fair number. So you know that stuff is expensive. You know, for 300 gig of SSD storage, you know, last I saw it was around $1,000 to get it at enterprise grade. And it doesn't take you long to go like, well, you know, the SSD stuff is really neat and I'd love to use it for my servers and we need how many terabytes and whoo, that's more than my company's worth. You know, it's a non-starter. So tiering is a fantastic technology because now we allow you to take your existing storage, your existing hard drives, and with just a small number of SSDs, get an amazing performance improvement. So I'm going to hand across to Jeff, who's going to demo some of this storage technology for us.
So here is Windows Server 2012 R2. One of the things I want to show you right now is exactly that tiered storage. Now, what you can see here is I've got a pool of disks. You can see this is 17 terabytes. This actually isn't a lot of disks. This is a total of 20 disks. 16 of them are traditional spinning disks. 4 of them are SSD. That's it. Nothing mystical, nothing magical. Very pedestrian, quite honestly, when it comes to a storage from a storage perspective. However, when you enable tiering, what you're doing is you're taking advantage of the fact that SSD gives you profound I/O performance, while hard disks give you the capacity you need. Let me show you just how easy it is to create pooled storage. We're going to walk you right through that. You can see here's my 17 terabyte storage. I'm going to create a new pool. You can see here I'm going to create storage tiers on this. It's going to ask me now, do you want simple? Do you want mirrored storage? I'm going to go with mirrored, thank you very much, for better reliability. I can go with two-way or the new three-way mirror for better resiliency, so I'm going to go with that. And then finally, it's going to ask me, how do you want to specify the size of your tiers? If you want, I can do this independently. I can give the SSD tier one size, the hard disk tier another. To keep it real simple, I'm just going to choose the maximums for both. All right? And just like this, couple of steps, That's it. I've created my tiered storage. So all the hot blocks are going to reside in the SSD. All the cold blocks stay on my big capacity hard disks. Well, let's take a look at what this means in terms of performance. And what better way to do that than with a SQL I/O test? Because what when you think of applications and workloads that need super high IOPS performance, SQL and database is going to be at the top of the list. So this first one is using Windows Server 2012, using Direct Attach and the remote file storage. Now, as Ben mentioned, we made some huge investments in SMB3 around performance, scale, continuous availability. Well, what you can see here is, look how well it manifests itself. You can see that Direct Attach and remote file, pretty much on par. That's how good SMB3 is. You're pretty much getting it the same performance even though it's remotely attached. Now we're going to run that same test with Windows Server 2012 R2, except this time we've enabled storage tiering. Guess what, folks? This isn't just a little performance boost. This is profound. Over 124,000 IOPS. You're seeing over a 16x performance improvement just by adding 4 SSDs. To put this in context, to get that level of I/O performance, I would literally have to roll in racks and racks of disks. I would need over 260 15K SAS drives to do that. I'm doing this with 20 disks. That's the capability, the power we're bringing with storage tiering, because we want to dramatically reduce the cost for performance and for capacity. So that's just one example of the investments we're making in storage. Now, at the same time, we're also looking very heavily at the network. Now, what's been very interesting is the last 18 to 24 months, I've been hearing SDN, network virtualization, SDN. Software-defined networking is the new hot buzzword du jour. It's going to take over the world. No one's ever done it before. This is brand new. It's black magic. No one's ever done it before. Except we've been doing this for a while now. How do you think we run Azure? You don't literally think we have humans that make our network changes in Azure, right? On a daily basis, we've actually made up to 50,000 network changes per day. Humans don't make those changes. Any one of those changes could be fat-fingered and wrong with catastrophic effects. So we've been making some huge investments in networking. We want to eliminate the seams. We want to provide greater flexibility. We want to provide streamlined control. It's about business and technical agility and removing human error. What have we been doing? Network virtualization. Now, let me be very clear here. We've been shipping network virtualization for over a year. This is already shipping right now in Server 2012. So while the other guys are making noise about, hey, we're about to ship it, great, you're late to the party. We're already up to version 2 now, because we're already enhancing it even further in Server 2012 R2. Now, one of the interesting things about network virtualization is I've listened over the last year is people are asking and answering the wrong question. When you ask someone about network virtualization, usually the answer becomes a series of acronyms. NVGRE, encapsulation, VXLAN, insert other acronym here. Actually, that's the wrong question. The real question is, why network virtualization? Well, I'll tell you really simply. Think about that slide I showed you a few minutes ago with the three different clouds. You want to know why network virtualization? Because without network virtualization, you can't fulfill that promise. To be able to have workloads running in your private and move them to a public and move them to a service provider, you have to virtualize the network. Software-defined networking is actually what allows you to give you that mobility and agility. So why network virtualization? It's about agility. And it's about allowing you to take your network to the cloud. That's exactly why it's important. And it's extremely important, which is why we simply built it into the platform. You don't need anything extra. The control plane is in System Center. The data plane is in Windows Server. Easing management. We've done exactly that. We have separated the control and the data plane. And we're centralizing management of the control plane. In addition, it actually enables new scenarios that have never been possible before, such as live migrating across subnets. By definition, traversing a subnet means drop-in connection, not with network virtualization. You can actually live migrate across physical subnets without any downtime. merge networks on the same fabric, break VLAN scalability limits. Question for you. I'm going to ask, lights up one more time. How many people in the room have more than, say, 50 VLANs in their infrastructure? All right. How many of you have more than 100 VLANs in your infrastructure? I still see quite a number of hands. How many of you have more than, say, 500 VLANs in your infrastructure?
I can't believe that that man's smiling as he puts his
God bless you all. All right, I'm going to ask it again. How many of you have over 1,000 VLANs in your infrastructure? Oh, my gosh. That many. Okay. I'm sorry to hear that, by the way. My heart goes out to you. Because that's a tremendous amount of complexity. And actually, network VLANs do have defined limits. With network virtualization, we can have over 16 million networks. So trust me, you're set. And by the way, if 16 million isn't enough, you got bigger problems. So the other thing it allows you to do is to merge networks on the same fabric. So if you've been through a merger and an acquisition, I was talking with a dairy in North America a few months ago, where they actually merged a number of dairies over the last couple years. And the CEO I was talking to basically said, look, I've essentially got 5 or 6 different dairies here. They all have their own data centers, their own infrastructure, and I'm trying to converge them into a single location. And I don't know how I'm going to do it. I think I need to hire a guy with a PhD in networking to kind of bring this all in and figure it out for me. I said, you could certainly try and do that, or you could actually just use network virtualization, and they can run on the same physical fabric. They can run on the same physical switches, the same physical cables, the same physical NICs, but they'll still remain logically segmented through network virtualization. So there are so many interesting things it solves, but the key and most important thing to understand of why network virtualization, it's the agility. It's the ability to take your workloads unmodified and move them between locations. That's why. That's why it's so important. In 2012 R2, we're taking software-defined networking to the next level. We're introducing in the box a multi-tenant edge gateway. This makes it easier to integrate your network virtualization with your physical infrastructure. We have self-service virtual network provisioning and management, and key thing I want to point out here is it's standards-based. This is not Microsoft proprietary. This is actually industry standards. This is NVGRE. This is actually a standard that's been around a while, but we're actually taking advantage and using it to its fullest potential. And key here is you don't have to worry. You're not going to be locked into something that's Microsoft specific or proprietary. It is truly an industry standard.
Thank you. One of the things that really excites me about our work in the networking space has been all the engagement that we've been getting from our hardware partners. Because we've noticed something. You actually need to buy hardware to do networking. Who would have thought? And also, you know, people have their different preferences. So we've been really working hard, both with specific partners, but as Jeff mentioned, we're also really committed to ensuring that we support standards-based management. You know, and we've actually been out there, you know, talking to our hardware partners, telling them, hey, you know, please make sure your standard's compliant so that everything's just going to work. So there's been a number of different engagements going on. The first one has been around the delivery of gateway appliances to enable exactly the hybrid cloud scenarios that Jeff was talking about. We have F5 Iron Networks, Huawei, thank you, who have delivered solutions here. The one that I really love is actually the Arista OMI-based top-of-rack switch. Now, if you've ever done a large data center deployment, you know that you have this whole chicken and egg problem where before you can manage your data center, you need to set up the network so you can manage the network. Now, that's always a pain. The great thing here is you get, you know, these new switches that are standards-based. You can roll it into your data center, plug it in with zero configuration. System Center can discover that switch. It can configure that switch. It can set it up for your environment. So you can be sitting in your office at your console, get a call from the guy in the data center going like, yeah, I plugged in the cords. And you're like, great, we're done. Like, hit the button, have it configure. That is just really exciting. And we're, you know, really pushing deep on the standards-based management here. Then we have a whole bunch of partners who are continuing to work with our virtual switch extensions. We've got Cisco and NEC doing great work integrating their high-end network hardware solutions into our virtual switch infrastructure. But we've also got some software partners out there who are bringing new capabilities there. And the final thing is, of course, we're working with the chipset vendors. One of the things that I'm really excited to see coming out is we have a number of partners now who have seen the great work that we're doing around network virtualization, and they're now going back and working on doing NVGRE acceleration in their adapters so that you do not have to compromise between functionality and performance. You can have the best of both worlds. So a lot of great work going on there. But now I'd like to talk about my homeland, the compute aspect. So to be really clear here, when I've been out talking to people about Hyper-V and Windows Server 2012, you know, the consistent message is, like, boy, you guys really hit this for six. You know, this is fantastic. This is exactly what we needed. We are happy. We're deploying. This is great. I had someone come up to me 6 months after we'd launched 2012 and say, you know, Ben, the biggest concern I have is how are you guys going to do better than this in the next release? And I told them, you've got nothing to worry about, because we have not been sitting on our laurels. We've been listening, and we've been working hard, and it is our goal to show that we are not done with virtualization, and that we are, you know, industry leaders here and really pulling ahead in virtualization. So you told us, reduce complexity, reduce cost, ease deployment, make the platform more flexible. And we have responded with, honestly, an astonishing amount of features. I have a session tomorrow where I am going to struggle to cover all these features in an hour. So a couple of things to point out here before I switch over to my little demo. We've done cross-version live migration. We've got a lot of momentum around 2012. We don't want that slowing down because you heard about 2012 R2 coming. So I can tell you, keep on deploying 2012. When R2 releases, you're going to be able to upgrade with zero downtime. Once again, plugging another one of my sessions. I'm going to be speaking on Thursday. I have a whole session for upgrading your private cloud where I'm going to be stepping you through all the details here. We have a really cool feature, automatic VM activation. Who here enjoys activating operating systems? Anyone? 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 Yeah, I've got a bunch of OSs. Well, with 2012 R2, Hyper-V, you don't have to. It just works. It's fantastic. And the demo I'm going to do now is some of the work that we've done on live migration. So just switch across. We have my marketing team made this lovely little GUI for this. If it was just me, it would be PowerShell, and I'd hit a button, and we'd stand here for a minute. So
Looking at a command prompt.
So I'm going to start two live migrations. Now, this is the same hardware infrastructure, and it's actually the same virtual machine. It's an 8 GB virtual machine running SQL with an OLTP workload on it, which, for those of you who know about this, is kind of the hottest workload for us to live migrate. It's got a bunch of memory stuff going on. The only difference here is the top live migration is running 2012. The second one is running 2012 R2. But what we've done is we've built a live migration compression technology where you're going to see, it's done. This is the same hardware, no changes. I love this. When we released the preview, I actually had someone send me a message on Twitter going, loving 2012 R2, it's given me a free upgrade to my networks. You know, because you just deploy it, and now live migration is 2-3 times faster. But what if you are willing to, you know, invest in new hardware to get the most possible? Well, Jeff's just kicking off a live migration, same virtual machine, but this time I've got RDMA-enabled hardware. This allows us to do direct memory access across the network, and what you'll see is 10 seconds. 10 seconds to live migrate an 8 GB virtual machine with an active workload. Now, 2012, it's going to take about 1:30. It should stop any moment now. There, 1:25. So we've gone from 1:25 with no hardware changes down to 30 seconds. So a 3x performance improvement. If you're willing to invest in the hardware, 10 seconds. So why does this matter to you? Well, the real world scenario to think about here is it's Tuesday. You have an 8-node Hyper-V cluster, 128 gig of RAM on each box, and it's time to deploy a patch. And you want to do this with zero downtime, so you're going to use our tools to live migrate every virtual machine on that cluster around and do the patch. Well, I've done the math. I know the numbers. If this was 2012, it's probably going to take 10 hours. And yeah, it's zero downtime, but that is not a fun 10 hours. 2012 R2 with same hardware, you're now down to 3. That's something you can do in the afternoon. If you want to get the new RDMA-enabled networking, it's now 45 minutes. That's something you can do in a lunch break. Now, this really changes how you can manage your data center and how agile you can be. So with that, I'm going to hand over to Jeff, who's going to step us through management and consistency.
Awesome. Thank you. So a couple things. I mentioned earlier talking about the consistency across public, private, and service providers. Well, we take this very, very deeply, and we're thinking about how we embed this and how we integrate this throughout the platform. And one thing to keep in mind is all of that investment you've made in learning System Center, understanding System Center, it all just continues to translate, continues to pay you dividends. Keep in mind, the best way, if you're running Link, if you're running SharePoint, if you're running Dynamics, if you're running Exchange, if you're running SQL, the best way to manage it is through Microsoft System Center. Plain and simple. Let's be very clear here. Think about this for a moment. If you're running SQL and you're using System Center to manage SQL, you have a management pack. Guess which team wrote the SQL management pack? The SQL team. Guess who wrote the Exchange management pack? The Exchange team. Guess what? These guys know their applications better than anybody else. That's why people have realized, and in fact why we've seen an explosion in System Center licensing. For now, one out of every two servers now is licensed with System Center. Because people are realizing, oh my gosh, why wouldn't I do this? Let's be very clear here. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I think I'm going to manage Exchange with VMware. No. You wake up and you realize the best way to do this is through System Center. The best way to run your workloads is managed by System Center running on Microsoft Hyper-V. At the same time, we're also adding even more capabilities. Java application performance monitoring. We already do a great job for .NET, and now we're adding it even further for Java. We also have a System Center management pack for Azure. So now think about this. Again, think about Azure as an extension, a logical extension of your data center today. Okay? You already have your existing servers, your existing storage and networking. Now you need some more? Great. Go provision some on Azure, and guess what? I can still monitor it using the same System Center tools that I know. Fantastic. At the same time, we're also making further investments in System Center Advisor, System Center Global Service Monitor to, again, provide you best-in-class monitoring. And again, it's about application monitoring. Because at the end of the day, honestly, I don't care if Exchange, SharePoint, SQL, Dynamics, Link is running on a physical machine or a virtual machine. I care that it's running well. That's the thing that matters to me. And of course, integrating this with Visual Studio, for making sure we've got, because we have the best development platform there. Now, what's really exciting is how we're bringing this all together. And now, bring up the Windows Azure Pack. So I made this comment earlier. Let me go back to this point for a moment. You go to Amazon, you go log in, you get one experience. You go to Salesforce, you get another experience. You go to Azure, you get a third experience. You go to your own private cloud, you get another experience. And every time you go to somewhere different, it's something new, something you've got to train someone on. Ugh, I thought cloud was supposed to be easy. I thought we were supposed to be reducing complexity. Well, what we're doing now is we're taking our learnings from running Azure. We're giving you that user interface, the learnings that we have in terms of application deployment, scale, things like that. We're actually packaging it and giving it to you. It's yours. So if you want to build your own private cloud, or if you're a service provider and you want to provide Azure consistent clouds, guess what? The Windows Azure Pack is all about that. It's extensible so that you can integrate it and plug it in with your existing systems and operations. It plugs into System Center in Windows Server. It gives you tenant user services. It gives you high-density websites. It gives you virtual machines. And again, it gives you that Azure consistent experience. Let me show you. So first, let's start with Azure itself. So here I've got stock old Azure. I'm logged in. This is the public site. And you can see I've got a long list of items. What's interesting is, as Ben was pointing out in going through the retrospective earlier on in terms of Azure, When we developed Azure from the very beginning, I'll never forget when they first showed me the UI for Azure, and I looked at it and I said, oh my gosh, that is so cool. I just want to touch it because it's so clean. But they also designed the interface to be scalable. Because when Azure first came out, there were a few things on this left-hand side. And over the years, we've just continued to add more and more and more and more. And guess what? So many things that we need a scroll bar now. And we're continuing to add more capabilities in Azure. So for example, if I want a high-density website, no problem. Let's go on over here. Let's take a look at the dashboard. And the dashboard gives me that quick glance. And I can see all sorts of information that's useful to me. CPU time, data in and out, requests, HTTP server errors, things like that. Very clean, very easy to use. Now, one of the key aspects and tenets of cloud is elasticity. What I really want to be able to do is take advantage of the fact that today I may develop an application, I may have a website that's running great, it's in development, and then I'm going to publish this out onto the, and make it in live, it's in production. And guess what? Maybe business is going well and it's growing and growing and growing. Wouldn't it be great if somehow the site would actually automatically scale? Well, we think so too. That's why we've developed Azure Autoscaling. So here you can see I've got that website. In fact, I'm going to go enable autoscaling. And you can see I've got, currently got a small instance. And right now it's running anywhere between 1 and 3 instances. And so here's my CPU. And I may realize, hey, you know what? After it gets above a certain level, it's going to add some more instances. You know what? Currently it's 80. Maybe I want to make it 85. By the way, this can all happen hot and live while the VMs and the web instances are running. In fact, maybe I want this to not be 3 instances, but 6 instances, or maybe even, let's go all the way to 10 instances. This is all happening live, hot, while everything is running. And guess what? I click on save and I'm done. That's what Azure Autoscale is about. It's about bringing the promise of elasticity and making it that simple. I just gave you easy policy controls with a slider. Boom, 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 done. Very, very cool there. Let's get into virtual machines with our infrastructure as a service. So over here, you can see I've got a number of virtual machines. Let's go ahead and create a new one. Again, just click here on the new. Very super intuitive. And in fact, let's go right to the gallery. You'll see here in the virtual machine gallery, I got a whole bunch of images that are already there. We've pre-populated it with a whole bunch of images for you. Server 2012 data center, that's the RTM version. We've got the R2 preview, we've got Server 2008, we've got SQL, SharePoint, BizTalk, Ubuntu. Yes, we have Linux images up here, not a problem. Ubuntu, SUSE, OpenSUSE, Visual Studio, Ultimate Preview, et cetera. And of course, if you want to upload your images, you can do that as well. Think about this for test dev. This is a huge boon for test dev. You could simply say, guys, I've already uploaded the image. And by the way, when you shut down the VMs, we don't charge you for that. If the VMs aren't running, we don't do that. We made that change many months ago. This is a killer for test dev. And of course, I can upload my own images. Now, I'm going to go with my favorite, which is the Server 2012 R2 preview. And I'm going to give this a name real quick. And one thing I want to point out is the size of the VMs, because not a lot of people realize this, but we can create some pretty large virtual machines now. We can go all the way up to 8 cores and 56 gigabytes of memory. This is really great for some of those SQL and scale-up workloads that are out there. And then I'm going to give this a name, give it a password. All right. Here's my DNS name. Yep, that checked out okay. My virtual network subnet's okay. Boom. There's my RDP endpoint connection. Yep, there's my PowerShell connectivity for remote. And just like that, in a few steps, there's my virtual machine. It's already created for me. Now, you may be thinking, okay, this is great. In fact, this could be used as a way to extend my data center. But Jeff, what about the networking? How do I make this look like an extension of my data center? Not a problem. Guess what? We're going to want over here to Azure Networks, where I have my Contoso virtual network. And in fact, there it is. So this virtual machine will appear as just another resource on my network. Seamless. That's what the cloud is all about. So this is all Azure. Now, I want you to take a very good close look at this. In fact, I'll go back to the home screen for just a second. All right, are you watching closely? This is all Azure. This is all public. This is the Microsoft public cloud. Now I'm going to switch to the Windows Azure pack. Hold on, folks. Oh, come on. Oh, I think it's looking for... I need to type in a password. Yes, I do. Hold on. Just knew that would happen now, right? Ben, feel free to do a little two-step if you'd like.
I'm just trying not to laugh at you for having your demo hit a glitch. We knew that someone would hit a problem, and I was just hoping it wouldn't be me. So looks like I got lucky today.
Oh, come on. Hold on.
And Jeff's just demonstrating that the security works well.
Oh, come on. No whammies, no whammies. Hold on here.
Come on, third time's the charm.
I didn't bring it.
You can do this. Got a long sheet of passwords up there for all the different demos, so.
Come on.
So that said, you should all be giving Jeff some understanding here. Because he's been to Australia a couple of times before, but this has been his first time that he's been here with me. So yesterday I demanded that he go out and have some real Australian cuisine. So I think he deserves applause because I took him out and I gave him a sausage roll, a steak and curry pie, and a ginger beer. And he handled it like a man, took them all down, and was very happy. I have pranked many Americans with Vegemite.
All right, while I get the right password, I don't have the right password in front of me. All right, while I get the right password, I'm going to let you continue on to the next slide. Hold on.
Okay.
I promise I'll get the right password. Give me one sec.
Do you want to throw me the clicker?
Absolutely.
So while Jeff's working on that, let me just wrap up and highlight some of the points that we've made today. The first thing is, it is time to virtualize every workload. You know, let's be really clear on this. If you have a workload that you think can't be virtualized, come and talk to me and Jeff, and I will politely explain to you why you are wrong. Okay, it may not be polite depending on when you find me, but I would love to have that conversation. It is time to rethink storage. This is a big one. You know, as I said, you know, the storage and networking, this is really your next opportunity to be the hero for your organization. This is your opportunity to be able to show people, hey, there's a new way to think about this. We can change the way we do our data center. We can be more efficient. We can be more agile. We can be more cost effective. We can do things that the other guys can't. It's time to expand business continuity. We've actually made a lot of investments in our data recovery story with Hyper-V Replica, with Azure Replication Manager, which we haven't talked about today because we just haven't got enough time. But we're going to be talking more about that this week. It's time to embrace hybrid services. For too long, I've been talking to people, and the public cloud, private cloud story conversation has been, do I do one or the other? That's not the world we're in anymore. No, the world we're in is you do both. You do both, and you do the one that makes sense, you know, for the specific problem, for the specific deployment that you're working on. And it's time to unify application management. You know, when I talk to people about, you know, public cloud, one of the things I hear a lot of stories about is, hey, I've got people going around me as the IT guy and going to a public cloud service. And that's where the Azure Pack is so exciting, because you can deliver exactly the same experience that people are getting through public cloud through your on-premise. So please, I would really encourage you, you know, dig in deep on these technologies. How are you going, Jeff? He hasn't got it to work yet. I think we're out of time, Jeff. We may have to wrap it.
My sincere apologies. This is what happens when a timeout hits. And I
don't
have
Jeffa, do you want to come up?
All right. So, one last thing to think about. I'll try and come into your session tomorrow, and we'll do the Azure Pack demo there, because
absolutely.
I promise I will have found the password by then. couple things to keep in mind. Again, our commitment to you is to, again, to be very clear, to make sure that we understand your requirements, to make sure we're giving you the best ability to run your cloud whenever and wherever you choose to do it. Whether it's on the private cloud where you fully control it, whether it's a public cloud or a service provider, we want to make sure that we're doing what makes business sense for you. We thank you very, very, very much. Appreciate it. Have a wonderful time at TechEd. Let's go build the best cloud together. Thank you very much.